All right. Hey, welcome world. It's Anthony Chansamu from Authentic Marketer. And it's been a while. It's been a while since I did a recording for Authentic Influence podcast. And it's actually thanks to my amazing guest for doing this that I'm actually able to come back and bring this live stream to you, unless you're watching or listening to the recording. All good. Let's get started. So I'm going to introduce our topic for today. We are basically talking about newsletters, how to get started. It's going to be a live coaching session with my amazing friend, Nock Lee, who's in Melbourne. And we're going to take her through the process of thinking about, you know, what a newsletter might look like, what tools to use, what content to put in there, and maybe even frequency and other questions that she might have. So I'm going to bring her on in a second. I'm just going to give you a quick introduction to who our guest is. So Nock Lee is an event expert. She's a master at community building and leveraging events for business growth and community. Already mentioned she's based in Melbourne, Victoria. She's involved in a few different projects, which I'm going to ask her to talk to you about. Let me just bring in Nock right now. Hello, Nock.
Hi. Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Okay. So how's things in Melbourne?
Terrible as usual. The weather is dreary. There's no sun at the moment.
That's
typical Melbourne though.
That is typical Melbourne. Well, Sydney's starting to resemble that, so I'm not loving it at all. So we actually met by chance through the Asian Hustle Network, which is one of the projects that you are really deeply involved with, and that gave us the opportunity to actually hang out in Da Nang in Vietnam. Yep. Last year, which was super awesome. So let's just start there. Like, how did you get involved with HN? What's your role with the organization? And then what kind of other projects are you involved with right now?
Yeah, so Asian Hustle Network started at the end of 2019 in San Francisco by founders Brian and Maggie, and they just wanted to bring together a community of, you know, Asian entrepreneurs or people that are, you know, thinking about starting a business. They just wanted to build a community and network. So that started on Facebook. There's a Facebook group, this private group, and now, you know, it's up to like 100,000 members, which is great. And then from there, they've done heaps of different events and conferences around the world. And that's where I came in. So I reached out to them early 2020 and said, if you ever wanted to hold an event or start the community here in Australia, in Melbourne, I will put my hand up for it because I love just planting the seed. That's a person I am. But also, I also love running events as well. So that's what I'm passionate about. And yeah, so since then, we've ran a couple of events in Melbourne and in Sydney. And we're in the process of registering as a non-for-profit, which I am the president of Asian Hustle Network Australia. So we're really trying to push this community, grow it. And so a project we're working on is Asian Heritage Week as well. So to make it a global thing, to be seen in, you know, Australia, be great. So that's something we're working on at the moment. But yeah, I just do a lot of things in events, but in parts of different projects, so if that makes sense.
What's the mission for HN, particularly for Australia? I know it's a global group, but as president, what's your mission with the profile here?
It does sound vague, but we do want to just amplify Asian voices. So I'm not sure if you heard of Gold House in America. Mm-hmm. So they're more in the media and entertainment. Like they're huge. They have say, and they have quite a lot of power in, you know, Hollywood, and we want to do something like that, but in the entrepreneur world and business world for the Asian community. So that's what we want to do. So we start off with the community, start doing events, but then from there on, you know, we're working on a VC fund, we're working on like accelerator programs. There's a lot of different ideas that we have in mind. And yeah, first we just want to get this registration through first, and then we can start getting grants and investors and, yeah, go from there.
Yes, yes, and yes, and count me into all of those. Okay, now let's talk quickly about your work with MAP PR and events. So you're an event specialist. Yes. What does MAP do?
So MAP is a PR and events agency in Melbourne, and we sort of cater more to the Chinese market. Or the Asian market. So if you're wanting to tap into the Chinese market, that's where we come in. So we play with a lot of platforms such as Little Red Book. I'm not sure if you heard of that, AMF. So it's like China's version of Instagram. It's huge.
Okay.
So we do similar things to other marketing agencies, PR agencies. So, we take care of social media accounts for Little Red Book. And then we do take on other event accounts. So as events can be seasonal, so it's more like a client wants us to organize a conference or be part of a conference or want to do a PR event, that's we come in and do that too. So
and I can see there's some similarity there with also what you're doing with the Melbourne Chinatown Business Association raising or empowering Chinatown's business owners and businesses and community through partnerships and advocacy and things that you're doing there. So I really like that you're all about the raising the voice of people who have of influence and also yes. actively encouraging people from these groups to get involved. And I don't know how far in terms of like politics you go, but I think that's there's some interaction, obviously, with and whatnot.
Yeah, so sort of like the messenger or the between business owners or traders in Chinatown and City of Melbourne Council. So I don't want to be too involved in politics. I've always tried to avoid that. But this is probably the most I'll go. Like I came in just to be the event lead, so to be really do really fun things to bring tourism and people back into the city, into Chinatown. Market at Chinatown is more of a tourist destination more than just some place you want to go and just have dirty dumplings. So there's a few things we're trying to do with Chinatown. So yeah.
And that ties directly into your foodie tendencies and all. Is it just really an excuse for you to get great food? Not like, come on.
I've been a foodie ever since, it's in Asian culture. Like we've been brought up with like amazing food. It's just food and like gatherings, parties at home. That's where it all started for me. Hosting. I think when I think about it, my love for hosting or creating events or bringing people together started from home because my mum loves, cooking, hosting people, having people over. So I think that's where I got it from.
What's your like first memory of an event hosted by your mum? Like what was that?
It would have been like one of our birthdays or something. Like we used to have like huge a lot of people in the family and just friends, and we have a huge backyard, so we like round tables, heaps of chairs or stools or squatting, I don't know. A lot of food cooked and barbecues. So definitely a lot at a young age. It was just I think would be one of my birthday or my brother's birthday, definitely.
Yeah, I think that's it's almost I'm just thinking about the parties my mum used to host when I was, like 4 or 5 years old. And it's just, even I remember we have a photo, I can't find it now, but there's a photo of me probably 5 years old and there's all like the neighbors and everyone gathering around. And I'm like, it's just like part of our culture, exactly. Bringing people together. And that's tremendous that you can do that in a business context as well. So all of this feeds into this conversation today and the reason why you're here. So tell us about what ideas you've had about a newsletter and starting one and also a blog and what's really driving that? Like what's the vision for it?
I've just been having all these ideas and, how it's like, and when you start a business, you have a million ideas and you're like, yep, I'll get to it one day. And I just haven't really. And I've seen what you've done with your newsletters. I'm like, I've been inspired by that too. And I think you once mentioned me, one of your newsletters, like one of the articles I wrote. And I'm like, and then I did reach out to you and I thought, you know what, I really miss writing. It's something that I used to do and I was really good at when I was younger. And I feel like, you know, when you're in business or you're working, you sort of get distracted. So I wanted to get tapped back into that and something for myself more so, not to, you know, really bring more business or thing. I think I really just want to start working on my personal brand as well, but have a fun element to it. So I want my newsletters to, be something around events, but have more of a fun element to it that brings me out. I think this session is great because I wanted to sort of mind map this out with you, brainstorm a little bit, overall, we just talked about events and hosting, and I think that's what I want to come across as, like, you know, the hostess with the mostess, something like that. So hosting can come, under hosting can be event planning, it can be, you know, branding, marketing, it could be food and travel. You can just involve so many things under the word hosting. And so I wanted to sort of just map that out with you as well today.
Okay, that's really cool. You said a couple of things that kind of set off light bulbs for me. So one is like this hostess with the mostess idea, and just this concept of really your motivation for a lot of the work that you do. And so let's dive a bit into that. I'm going to bring up I've got a Google slide that I'm going to bring up onto the screen. I'm going to give also a shout out to Berenice and Patrick who joined us on LinkedIn. Hello, thanks for joining us. And if you have any questions, like things that you guys are trying to work out for yourself and in the world of newsletters, let me know in the chat and we'll kind of try and tackle those as we go along. So let me just share my screen here. I've got I need to do? I need to create a separate tab. So let's do this. Now I am going to give a shout out to StreamYard, which is a tool that I'm using to present this. It's been a while since I've used this tool, so bear with me.
Pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, it just makes it a lot easier. Okay, can you see my screen now?
Yes.
Yes, okay, cool. So we're going to this. I'm going to go to... wanting to do this, let's run through. So you just said a couple of things. So hostess with the mostess, love it. I don't know if I'm spelling that right, but I don't care. So we're not here for grammar checks. Okay, so tell me more about, like, okay, who's the audience? Who do you want to be reading this newsletter and this blog?
I think that's where I wanted to check with you, because I'm like, you know, obviously LinkedIn has a different audience, and then the things that I want to do as well, the more fun stuff, like, you know, maybe the travel tips or food tips, you know, does that belong under this sort of newsletter, or do I have to even, is it too much to start two newsletters to sort of have two different audiences? Obviously that's not ideal, or I can repurpose it slightly differently so I can have two. But yeah, I wanted one to be a little bit obviously about hosting events, so people that maybe are interested in event planning or are in the industry already and they just wanted more inspiration or ideas or see cases, studies that I've done before. So that would be under events. And then just seeing what you're writing there. And like I said, hosting is such a broad term, right? So it could evolve other things. So, you know, I do get often asked, Nock, you know, do you have any venues that you can recommend me that I want to hold this event at? Or even I've got my dad's 70th birthday. Can you recommend me any restaurants in town that can have hold big groups? Okay, I answer these questions all the time. And I thought I really should have, you know, a guide or a website or blog somewhere where I can just go, hey, sure, how about you head over to my website instead of me, you know, like brainstorming and like researching, just have it all in one go. That saves me time as well. But that goes under hosting as well, doesn't it? So things like that. And then, you know, and like I said, a bit of fun, like I'm a massive foodie. For those that don't know me, like I love food. Like I've had a couple of food businesses as well. So I love going out there. I love not just trying, supporting other local businesses, but I love to, I started doing interviews with business owners. Just love to show and support people and show, like get to know more about the people behind the food, because I think that's so important, right? And I love supporting business in that way. So whether it's, you know, it could be a new place in town or meet blah, blah, blah from blah, 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 so you can get inspired or get some tips off, you know, their journey as well. So, yeah, a couple of little things that I have in mind, and I wonder if I can put them all in one newsletter without looking too messy or too confusing, because everyone will be like, what is Nock really about, or who is she and what is she really doing? So, so that's a couple of things that I had in mind.
Love it. Okay, so let's pause there. You've given me a few really juicy things to talk about. So something that I spent a lot of time on when I was sort of formulating my own newsletter, but also I attended let's call it an accelerator program. It was a 40-week accelerator course or program that I did back in 2015, hosted by the team at Dent Global, the company that runs these things. And they, at the time, that they had a 40-week accelerator program. I showed up, once a month. I won't go through the format of it, but the whole goal of it was to identify what is your key message, what is your personal brand, what does that look like, and then they gave some structure around, how would you go about building, a business around that, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the key takeaways I took from that, and I'm going to give a shout out to Glenn Carlson, who's the co-founder and the Australian sort of face of the brand. He's something that he said that stood out to me was, if you think about some of the leaders, in industries, tech startups or, big brands, whether it's Jamie Oliver or you're thinking about Steve Jobs, right? Usually what makes them stand out is the intersection of multiple passions, right? So you think about, why do some people gravitate to Apple versus Microsoft, right? Or Bill Gates, right? They're the main competitors in that industry. And if you think about Steve Jobs, what stands out about him or his company to you, Nock, when you think about Apple or Steve Jobs?
I guess they have so many products, and it's like something for everyone as well, I find.
Yeah. Do you have any Apple products?
Yes, I have a MacBook, but I gradually, converted from Samsung to Apple to iPhone eventually. It took a while.
Yeah, cool.
And I hated using iPhone for 6 months, but yeah, I'm used to it now.
Oh, good. Okay. So how would you...
It just works all together quite well.
It just works. So it's intuitive. It's convenient. It's easy. A word that I've heard a lot of people describe Apple products is beautiful.
Yes.
Right. And if you compare, an Apple, an iPhone, I wouldn't call the watches that, but some people would. But certainly when the iPhone came out, the iPod, when that came out, and we're like, oh, instead of this hard drive, when you think about a portable hard drive, it's a square thing and it's blocky and it's really ugly. And then, or before that, you had the Walkmans, right? So you had this thing you stuck your tape into, and you had this big thing attached to your hip. And then all of a sudden came this little device that was half the size. You could fit, 10,000 songs or something into this device. And they deliberately were the cool thing in town. It was they went, and their marketing strategy was to go after the underground scenes. They would go and find hot DJs in towns, in cities, and they would basically have them become the early influencers, right? Because if you went to, you were clubbing and you were out there and you saw this DJ was sporting an iPod, and you're like, what the hell is that? And I want that too, because I love the DJ, right? That was their way to actually their marketing strategy was to kind of attach themselves to the identity of the individuals, which was we're the cool, we're the hip young people, and we're new on tech and we love it. And then everything grew from that, right? So, but then if you think about Microsoft, Are you thinking beautiful? Are you thinking cool? Like, are you thinking like those? Probably not the words you used to describe those that particular brand. Definitely not going to describe Bill Gates as cool or hip or young. So it's, yeah, but it's actually the intersection between two things, two passions that Steve Jobs had from very young. So when he went to study, he actually, I'm not sure you're probably aware of this, but he was basically a hippie. That guy was very into like spiritual awakening and awareness, and he was studying yoga and studying, like, he would go to India and also to, like, he was doing LSD and all kinds of stuff, and he was really into design and beautiful things and how do people design like quality product that looks great. And then he was also obviously into tech, so he merged tech and design and brought those things together, right? Which was very different to the competitors at the time, right? Because all the other competitors were focused on like all the specs, like how fast your computer was going and how many gigahertz and megahertz and all these other things. And like for them, it's more about functionality, right? And performance, right? So that was unique. You think of, I mentioned Jamie Oliver. So for him, you know, he's a guy that never graduated from school. Like, he sucked at school, honestly. Like, he's actually said that. But for him, it was all about like bringing farm to table. It's like always like quality product and you know, food elements and whatever it is, but also how do you cook quality, like restaurant quality food in your house? Like, how do you do that, right? There was a whole thing around him and his family history. If you know the story, like, he grew up in his parents and his grandparents, or his father and great grandfather, they all ran pubs. So he grew up in the pub scene, and he was, you know, he sucked at everything else, but the one thing he knew how to do was to, you know, get out a pan and just whip up something that was amazing. And that was, you know, he took that. And then he also has a passion for sustainability, which is, if you read his books and whatever it is, he really talks about how do you, like grow quality produce and do it in a sustainable way. And so he has an environmental side to his story, which is how he got partnerships with big brands like Woolies and things like that, who were focused on sustainability, right? So multiple passions come together, right? So when you're telling me, like, I'm a foodie and I love to travel and love to interview inspiring business owners and get to know people behind the food, all right, you're lighting up, okay? So when Knock lights up, right? So anyone who's like watching a Knock video right now or listening to you talk or reading your newsletter, they go, hell yeah, because I want that person who's really into this stuff, right? And you're living it. Like, if anyone just has to follow your Instagram and see your IG videos that you do, the reels and whatever it is when you're traveling, you're like, yeah, you're really into like really cool spaces. You're into amazing food. You're into like awesome people. And you bring all those things together with the eye of someone who understands event curation, right? With someone who understands hosting, who understands event management and planning, right? So if you put that lens there and go, well, the expertise here is actually everything you've done in community and events, right? But you're going to be the person that travels with that lens on, okay? Mm-hmm. So when you're going and doing, like, let's talk about, a new restaurant that's launching in Melbourne in 6 months' time, and they're about to do their, you know, launch campaign or whatever it may be. And you give us the behind the scenes, like, you know, tell us about how they're actually putting that launch together. And you might interview their head of marketing or the owner or whoever it may be, right? Because you've got this amazing blog and this amazing newsletter where the audience are people who, like, love all these things. They love to travel. They love food. They love entrepreneurship, right? And for them, it's that they're either going to fit, to me right now, they're probably going to fit into two buckets. One is they're event planners, right? And community builders, right? They're the type of people who are just like you, but maybe at an earlier stage in their career, right? Mm-hmm. But then you're also going to have the people who are just the people who just enjoy, you know, events, food, travel, right? And there are people like me who won't necessarily run those events, but we'd collaborate, you know, I'd collaborate with you. Like when I'm like, I'm going to do a book launch knock and I want you to actually take care of that or have someone on your team do that for me. Right. I just have an idea and I want you to work out the execution. Right. So, and the vision. Right. So I think that's that audience. Right. So there's two distinct audiences that are coming out of this conversation for me. Does this resonate? Is there anyone else in your circle or in your network that doesn't fit into these two categories? Like, are they just people who are, I don't know, like government workers, like for whatever reason, are you hanging out with government people? Like, I don't know. Like, you tell me, who else are there? Do you have influencers in your mix? Do you have people who are like, IG, I don't know, people who are really doing well on Instagram or TikTok, whatever it might be? And are they more into the production side of what you do? Like, you know, how do you, is that someone that you've been connecting with? Like, you tell me, who else is in your world or in your orbit right now?
I guess you can call government people and all the entrepreneurs that I know are probably under community builders anyway, I would say.
Okay.
So you can put it in there. And then even influencers, I do know them because they are in the, you know, sort of same world, the foodie world, and we deal with them a lot with our PR marketing. But I guess they sort of go under enjoy events, food and travel anyway, I think. But But I still think the first two are probably the main target audiences. Yeah.
So that's it. So, and you can make a conscious choice around like who's the primary of the two, right? Because if you're thinking a year from now, 2 years from now, do you have any ideas around like launching some kind of product for them or serving them with like something, you know, whether it's a course on how to do this stuff or you want to run events in Melbourne or in Vietnam or something like maybe you're planning some kind of retreat where you take people from Australia to Vietnam, right? I don't know, but like, do you have some kind of ideas around what might you offer to people as a more exclusive experience with you beyond just reading a newsletter, right? Like how would they meet you in the real world and get to know you?
I've played with it, the idea of having or creating an event course. I just feel like it's not really for me, like it doesn't really light me up, which that's what you mentioned before. Like I've thought about it as a passive income. If it happens and there's some interest, maybe, but it doesn't light me up right. In the day, I like to, go with my gut instinct and go with what I find joy in. But I think this newsletter, if I just start it, it would obviously lead to opportunities. So to really put myself as a event expert is one thing. And then it's going, and from there, then I think the ideas will come. So like you said, creating really interesting experiences is something I always, I love doing and I would love to do more of it. Like whether it's like a retreat or like you said, or a really interesting experience, I'm all up for it. I think this newsletter would lead to that.
Okay, love it. All right.
Or opportunities so will come because of it, yeah.
Yeah, I really like that mindset because I don't think it's you don't need to define that right now. Like I think if it's more around, even if this like gives you someone's like reading this and they're going or read, you know, and they're like, oh, I love that guide that you put together on, you know, the best, you know, the top 10 yum cha places in Melbourne, for example. And they're just like, well, you know, I'd love to feature you in something or have you involved in some kind of project. That can turn into, you know, that could be, I've just written down, that could be clients. So they could be job opportunities. You know, people are like, we're looking to hire this type of person. Are you interested in doing that? It could lead to co-creation of interesting experiences, right?
Definitely.
You know, you may work with Luke Nguyen for the next time he goes to Vietnam and does another documentary series. He might get you involved in that.
I would love that.
Right. So, or Ando, right? Like I don't think he's done any real events yet. Like he's been doing a lot of TV stuff with his, you know, his painting show and things like that.
Yeah.
But you know, you could literally like do some kind of partnership or collab with him, and be kind of like, and other sort of, you know, I'm just thinking of the guys that I know right now, but I'm sure there are some amazing women as well. You know, that coming back to your initial point around just like helping, like our community and individuals within that community raise their voice and have a voice, right? So I think, and you're doing it through events, you're doing it through food, travel, right? So I actually think, to answer the question, put it all together. That's totally cool to do that. I would limit it to maybe three things though. Like, you don't want to have come and read my newsletter or read my blog and get these 5 or 10 things, because then people go, oh, like that's a lot. And it also makes it really hard for you to create the content. Because I think, for any newsletter or YouTube channel or whatever it is to take off, it's consistency over an extended period of time. And so if you go, well, if we were to take our content pillars here, and we're going to talk about travel tips, food tips, and maybe event tips, right? And they were the three pillars, if you will. And then within that, of course, you can bring into that interviews of entrepreneurs, because you can interview entrepreneurs who are traveling, entrepreneurs who are like eating at cool restaurants or run the cool restaurants or own the restaurants. You can, interview entrepreneurs who are running the events, right? So that all fits in there anyway. So I think it's more around like, that's your jam. I think I shared an example with you of like Amanda Natividad and her newsletter. So basically she is just one of the best marketers on this planet, and works for a startup that, they have a tool called Spark Toro, and basically that tool, it's like an audience research tool. But her, she's got her own newsletter. So she's got, they've got the Spark Toro newsletter, which is for the company, but then she has her own newsletter, which is Amanda's newsletter. And the thing that stands out about that is, yes, she gives some tips around marketing, which is her expertise and her profession, but then she also has a section of that, which is, here's a recipe of the week or recipe of the month. Because she actually has training. She actually trained to become a culinary chef. Right. And ended up not going down that path. Right. And then ended up going to marketing instead, and then had a baby. It really differentiates her newsletter from all the other marketing newsletters, because she's the only one dropping recipes and the really cool recipes. And you're like, gives that point of differentiation. Yeah. And I think that's what you can do with your content. Right.
Okay.
So is this been helpful with just kind of like answering that question?
Yeah. Okay. It does help me narrow it down a bit more.
Okay. And you can we can drill down even deeper into that, but I think just start off with, have a think around, okay, well, definitely you want to have event planning and event management tips, because that's going to be like your key thing that you're doing.
Yes.
I'm just thinking about when I look at IG posts or YouTube videos, I've not really seen someone with your experience and skill set do videos where it's like, let me give you the behind the scenes look at how this event was, or this restaurant or this thing was pulled together, right? It's typically like, here's a foodie and I'm going to eat the thing and I'm going to tell you how good it tastes or how bad it tastes and all the textures and all these kind of things, and this is the palette. But no one's actually, I've yet to see someone who says, well, let me tell you about how this restaurant did their launch and how they were actually, launch event or the anniversary event, or how that part of it, right? Like that, there's no one doing that content. So already, if you were just doing one of those a month, you would stand out, right?
Yeah.
And then all the businesses in that community, they'd be like, yeah, I want to know how Loon Croissants, when they launched, like how did they actually get, the initial following, and how did they get all the bloggers to do reviews and all these kind of things. They're going to want to read your newsletter too, because they're like, well, we want to learn how to market our own businesses, right?
Yeah.
And that can lead to opportunities, because people are going to be like, well, we're just going to hire you not to do that for us, right? Mm. So this is actually a really good way to build that audience. right?
Yeah.
Because you mentioned case studies. So let me make a note of content. So I think you talked about case studies. Yeah, that's a really cool one, okay? So let's go into your next question. So you had a question around where to do the newsletter or the blog, right? So
we got a comment as well, I think, regarding the same thing.
Right.
So obviously LinkedIn has its own newsletter feature. Yeah.
Yep.
So okay. And that's what you're doing too, aren't you? You're using LinkedIn newsletter, aren't you? Do you just stick to that, or do I also, you know, what is it? There's so many platforms like Beehive and, you know, so many other newsletter platforms.
All right, let's talk about that. Okay, so my current strategy around, so this I am doing it in two places. So I have LinkedIn, and I'm using a tool called Substack, right? It used to be Beehive when I started, and then I swapped over to Substack, and I'll explain the difference in a moment. The number one reason why I created a LinkedIn newsletter, I actually started my Beehive first, and then a few months later, I figured, I'm actually growing my LinkedIn following at a faster rate, right? Okay. Because I'm actively searching for, so let me just put some points here. So on LinkedIn, you can do things like find and connect with individuals, right? All right. So once you work out who your audience is, and we've kind of have a sense now, you've got those two different segments, right? You could then actively go into LinkedIn and search for individuals who have those job titles, right? So if you wanted to, if you were going after event managers, right, or event planners, okay, so those are job titles. So we could go into LinkedIn right now, type in event manager Melbourne, and it would dump out, let's say, 20,000 people, right? So then you could actively go and connect with each of those people, right? If you're on the free plan, you could connect up to 100 people per week, right?
Yeah.
That means you can send requests to, okay? I don't recommend doing that. I'd say shoot for about 50 people per week, just to avoid getting your account suspended for spamming people, right? But you can send people that, and then a good way to, you know, and it's like, well, why would some random person want to connect with me? Well, two things. One, your profile already speaks to you being an expert at events, right? So you already have that credibility, okay? The second thing is, if you approached them and said, well, I'm actually starting this newsletter for event managers and event planners, and I'm going to share these case studies and these stories and whatever it may be, would you be interested in checking that out, right? And you know they're going to say, most of them will say yes, because they're interested in that, because that's what they're doing for a living, right? So, or even better, if you could say, well, I might actually, I'm not looking for people to collab with, right? Because maybe they can actually contribute content, or they could be people that you interview as well. Then now you're approaching it with a partnership focus, and people love when someone comes to them and says, I want you on my podcast, or I want you on my YouTube channel, right? Or I want you in my newsletter, my blog, right? So that could be really useful. So this is why LinkedIn is good for that. And then if you're doing a weekly or bi-weekly newsletter, or monthly, right? Then anyone that you connect with and is following you on LinkedIn will see that. And automatically, when they accept a connect request from you, they're automatically given the option to subscribe to your LinkedIn newsletter, right?
Mm.
So that's an automatic subscription invitation to your LinkedIn newsletter.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. LinkedIn just makes it super easy for people to subscribe. You've met Cindy, my wife. So she started a newsletter around the same time I did on LinkedIn, and was more consistent with it at the beginning. She's at almost 50 weeks now, 50 newsletters every week for 50 weeks. She's got 300 subscribers to her newsletter, and she's done zero connect requests. She's not sent nothing to anyone. It's just people that like organically, she's met at events, whatever, who's just said, hey, I've met you here and I just want to connect. And they just, you know, LinkedIn says, by the way, Cindy's got this newsletter. Would you like to subscribe? And they just click yes, done, right? Yeah. So that's why if you're active on LinkedIn and you're building your community and your network there, definitely recommend you creating a newsletter there. Okay. The second question is, well, then if you're doing that, why would I go and create a newsletter somewhere else? Like, you know, on a Beehive or a Substack or a ConvertKit or something like this, right? The real answer to this is going to be determined by one question. And that question is going to be, do you plan to, at some point, invite your subscribers to engage with you, like through an event that you're curating? Or maybe you're just going to, you know, some show somewhere like in Melbourne or in Vietnam or something, and you're like, I want to invite my community to come along, right? Or are you know, at some point planning to monetize, right? And we talked about that. So if you were to launch some kind of workshop or some, you know, Melbourne tour of, you know, the best Chinese food or whatever it is, right? like, you know, if that's on your radar, then you're not going to be able to do that effectively through LinkedIn, right? Because the challenge with LinkedIn newsletter is, even though you get a high subscription rate, the view rate isn't high. It's actually quite low, right? Because if you think about it, because it's so easy for everyone to sign up to all these LinkedIn newsletters, like I literally am subscribed to like 50 LinkedIn newsletters and I'm not reading them when they come up. Whenever people are posting them, I'm not reading them because it's like I'm getting all the feed, like the content in the feeds already. And I'm just, unless I'm looking for the thing that like that Nox posting about and I'm going there to read it, in most cases, I'm not seeing it. Right. Whereas when you have something like a, like, you know, these are called like email newsletter tools or ESPs, email service providers. Right. For them, you're now, the advantage here is you're going direct to inbox with your newsletter.
Okay.
So now I'm getting an email from you in my inbox. And then it's like, oh, email from Rock Lee, here's her weekly newsletter or whatever, monthly newsletter. I'm going to open that if I'm interested in the topic, right? So, and when there's a higher level of trust when someone gives you their email address, right? Because it's easy for them to subscribe on LinkedIn because I don't have to give you anything, right? But when I go to, no, I'm choosing to input my email address and click subscribe, right? Now I'm saying, no, I like your stuff and I trust that you're gonna send me some good stuff and not spam me, right?
Yeah.
So now that's already one step higher in terms of building that relationship, okay? So if your goal is relationship building, this is where this kind of tool is much more advantageous, right? Now, another advantage here is if you want to monetize through some kind of membership, right, or subscription. Okay, so tools like Beehive and Substack offer what they call premium subscription, right? So when someone subscribes to your newsletter, they're presented with a box that says, well, you can subscribe for free or you can upgrade for like $5 or $10 a month and you set that rate, whatever you want that to be, and then you get these benefits, right? So you can actually think of it like a product or a membership where you can say, well, you can get the free because I'm going to put that out every week or every month anyway. Or if you want to come along to, I'm going to curate a quarterly event in Melbourne, or I'm going to do a, you know, a monthly webinar, or I'm going to bring a really cool guest on and just do a webinar with them for 30 minutes, you know, whatever it may be, or I might just do some really exclusive content. And you just need to pay me $5 a month to, you know, $60 a year or whatever it is for that. Right. So now you have a way to productize a newsletter and then monetize it. Right. And Beehive and Substack allow you to do that. So does ConvertKit, actually. So any of those three are fine. You cannot do that with LinkedIn. Okay.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So and the other advantage here with these tools is they have what they call partner networks or referral networks. So inbuilt into these tools are a recommendation engine. right? So basically, when you set up your newsletter, you're going to say, well, here are my categories. So I'm in the business or entrepreneur world. I'm in, you know, maybe it's under PR events, marketing / world, whatever your key topics are. And you get to choose, I think, three to five of them. And then what the tool does automatically, it goes out and says, hey, by the way, Nock, there are these 60 other newsletters that are in the same community, right? And it helps you find these. And then what happens is that those newsletters have the opportunity to automatically recommend your newsletter as well. So that's, you know, so they already have your audience and they're basically saying, hey, this is cool newsletter that I'm following, that I'm subscribed to, which is Nock's newsletter. And if you love events, obviously you are because you're following me, then you might want to check out hers. And that's how you basically have recommendations of people who are signing up through their recommendation engines, right?
Okay, cool.
And a large part of my, like, I've got, you know, something like, well, I'm around 350 subscribers now on Substack. I would say at least half of them came from the recommendation engine, right? Just from Substack, just going out there and going, for me, connecting with those, some of those newsletters, but also them just going, well, we love what Ant's doing and just, hey, check this out, right? So that's a huge advantage for newsletter growth, yeah? So they're the kind of two main differences between the two buckets of tools, right? So I've got a summary.
So you do both, do I?
Yeah.
So you still have both types? Okay.
Yeah, I do it both. And now I think the question that was asked, I can't see the name of the person who asked the question, but the question was, is it better to post on LinkedIn or copy and paste content into LinkedIn's newsletter? The way I do it is I actually have the weekly newsletter I do in Substack is long form. So it's usually like, let's say 1,000 plus words. I spend, you know, 2 to 3 hours writing that, curating that. I've got a structure that you know, the first part is kind of like, here's a, you know, my main section. And then beneath that, I do a thing that I do recommendations. Here are five things I recommend or three things I recommend you check out. You know, a podcast that I'm really liking, an event that I'm going to, or whatever it may be, right? That's very different to what I put on LinkedIn. On LinkedIn, there's two ways to go about it on LinkedIn. So on LinkedIn, you can do, I've seen people do a summary version of their long form newsletter. So they'll go, well, here's, so they'll take the main topic, right? So let's say you did, for your main newsletter, you did, you know, three ways to promote your events effectively. Or you did, maybe you did five awesome ways to promote events, right? To your local community. And then on LinkedIn, you might just pick one of those, right? And you might expand on that on LinkedIn and go, here's number one, right? And I'm going to give you a case study on how we did this for the, you know, for this organization, whatever, you know, tell a real story that you're involved in. And then you'd say, if you're loving this, I've got four more, some really cool things that we've done. Go sign up for my Substack or whatever it is, right? And so that's how you keep them on the same topic, but it's not exactly the same content. Does that make sense?
Makes sense.
Yeah. And I've had, and I've been doing that for a while now, and I've got, I'd say probably about 10% of my subscribers are reading my weekly LinkedIn newsletter, which is short. It takes me like 30 minutes to pull that together. And I put that up, and then, I'd say about 10% of people are now clicking from in the call to action. I'm saying, by the way, if you want much more deeper insights into marketing and the things that I'm doing, click here and go check it out. And they go over to my Substack and they sign up there, right? So, and a huge advantage of doing the newsletter tool as opposed to LinkedIn is now you're not relying on LinkedIn's algorithm. You're not at the mercy of, well, what if LinkedIn decide that they don't like your profile tomorrow and they shut it down, right? Your whole audience is gone. Like I had a mate of mine literally 2 weeks ago, they shut down his LinkedIn profile or suspended his account and 5,000 followers gone overnight, right? And, you know, and plus, let's not forget like the 500 posts that he'd done, video and text content that he'd put on there over the last 2 years, right? So that's the risk of being platform dependent. Like if you're relying on just that, you know, LinkedIn. And the really shitty thing about all that is LinkedIn don't really give you reasons why they block your account. Like they give you some random, like you've just violated our policy or terms of service. And then when you try to speak to customer support, they don't really give you a real answer. Right. So yeah, that's the risk of just having it on LinkedIn. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
So my suggestion would be if you're serious about building your personal brand over the next year, a few years, have it in an ESP, and then that way, if anything happens, like unlikely that a ConvertKit or a Beehive or a Substack is just going to disappear overnight, in the next few years. So it's, and you can always export, your subscribers anyway to a Google Sheet or an Excel file, and you'll have them if you were to switch platforms and go somewhere else, right? So yeah. So that's okay. A protection, I guess, for your personal brand, for the business that you're building. Yeah.
Yes, makes sense.
Okay. So we are, that time has flown by. We've already read like 50 minutes. So do you have any sort of pressing question for us to end with?
I think maybe just lastly, like your process, obviously you will plan and write out your main newsletter on your on Substack. And then do you then sort of summarize and pick some, pointers out for your LinkedIn, basically?
Yes. So yeah. I'm going to, because I'm such a visual learner type dude, I'll do a nice little diagram for you. So I do Substack. That usually goes out on Friday or Saturday, right? So let me give you the process for me. So I draft it on a Tuesday, right? And that's like two to 3 hours. And then I publish on a Friday or Saturday, right? I've just made it more.
Did you have a reason why of publishing on a weekend? I always assumed that would be,
Yes, because people are more relaxed on the weekend. And from research and experimentation, I have found that the top newsletter publishers, so if you think of people like Justin Welsh, I don't know if you know who he is, but he's a big influencer on LinkedIn, and there's some couple of others that I've studied with, they all publish their newsletters on a Friday or a Saturday, right? And that what they've realized is, particularly entrepreneurs, and that's who their target audience is, as much as we like to want to stop thinking about business and things on the weekend, we don't. And it's actually when we have downtime. So usually when it's like a 7 a.m. or 8 a.m., you're having your coffee or whatever you're doing on the weekend, or Friday morning, and you're just like, or maybe you're in transit and you're traveling, on a train somewhere, and you just go, I'm just going to log into my email, I'm checking my inbox, see what's there, and that's when people are reading those newsletters, right? You used to be, hey, do it on a Monday or Tuesday morning, but that's the worst time. Monday morning, people logging into the office, they're like, oh my God, I got 50 or 100 emails here. I'm not going to be reading your newsletter. Like, I just don't have time for that. That's the lowest priority when I've literally got team members going or, clients screaming at me. That your brain's not at, let's read someone's newsletter about food. Like, that's just not where it's at, right? So that's the psychology behind the choice of the day. And you can experiment. It's always like there's no hard and fast rule. You might test it for a while and see, I'm going to just do on Tuesday morning and see. I definitely advocate morning rather than going for like lunchtime or evenings, because I think people tend to switch off in the evenings. They want family time, they want whatever, couple time, whatever they're doing. For you, in your world, a lot of events are happening in the evenings, right? Like 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., whatever. They're not reading newsletters, right? So you got to think about that. You got to think about your audience and what are their behavioral tendencies, so that's how that goes. I do a LinkedIn newsletter on Monday. So you'll see on LinkedIn. So I'll do, and that's like 30 minutes to writing time. And then I'll do, sometimes it goes a bit longer, but usually I'm going to make a note that I'm using ChatGPT to help with these to speed up the time. When I wasn't using ChatGPT, the time like basically double. So if you're not using GPT, you're going to be allocate double the time frame to write manually and edit the thing.
So are you adjusting your tone of voice and your content for LinkedIn though? So you're not really copy and pasting anything from your Substack newsletter?
I've deliberately chosen not to do that. Okay. Now, you're aware, so I'm in the middle of writing my book at the moment. So what I do is I am doing a summarized version. So if you look at what I did last week, I basically published chapter 6 in Substack, and then on LinkedIn I actually did a copy and paste of one section of the chapter or of the newsletter into LinkedIn, but then I used ChatGPT to tweak it so it wasn't identical, right? Because I want to give people a reason to go over the Substack. I don't want them to be like, oh, if I sign up to your newsletter, you know, on your email tool, and I'm like, but I just read that on your LinkedIn. So what value am I really getting? And it's just like, you know, but what you can do is, like I said, what some people do, and I'm starting to do this now, is, so on Substack, the topic was money mindset and my wealth journey, right? So I wrote about that in chapter six, last week's edition. And then over on LinkedIn, what I did was one of the sections of that whole newsletter was around what I call the seven freedoms, right? And so I actually took that part out and said, here, LinkedIn audience, let me talk about the seven freedoms that you can sort of choose in your life. And then at the bottom of that, I said, well, this is only one part of a bigger conversation, which is over in Substack if you're interested. And some people clicked over and went over to Substack, right? So that's how I repurposed, if you will, a part of the bigger newsletter into a smaller newsletter for LinkedIn. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, totally makes sense.
Yeah. And that this whole section now, I'm basically have created an SOP or a process, which I hand over to my VA, and my VA takes care of that. And I just basically review, edit, tweak it as I need to, and send it over. I don't even need to do the 30 minutes of writing anymore, right? So that basically goes to the VA.
And so your VA that you've taken board, like, she publishes everything, she schedules everything. You just have to write the content for Substack, and then she does the rest.
Yeah. So basically, let me highlight the thing that I'm doing. So I do this part here. Oh, let me change the text here. There. So I'm sucking today. But text. Okay. Here. So the draft on Tuesday for 2 hours. That's the bulk of what I do. I'm doing that. Right. I will review. So with the VA involved, I will review for 30 minutes, right? So she basically drafts the rest of the newsletter, right? She takes what I write and she puts it into Substack for me, plus she finds all the other pieces, right? And then I review and give feedback, and that's 30 minutes of my time. And then she does everything else on this list is done by the VA.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's how you can do it. I'd start with you doing it first because you want to get your process down and get into a rhythm. And then once you're like, okay, this is working, all good, and then you can look at bringing someone on to help take care of most of it.
All right. And then obviously you have a newsletter coming out every week.
Yes. My frequency has changed. It started off when I wasn't writing a book and I could like write it in 2 hours, then it was every week, right? But now that I'm doing a book, it's not 2 hours anymore. It's taking me sometimes 3 to 4 hours to do it. So it's become every second week now that is dropping. Yeah. And that's, you just want to communicate that to your audience and be like, hey, like, you know, this is taking longer because of this reason. And most people are okay with that. Like, it's just setting up, it's like a TV show, right? Or a podcast. Like, you want to set up an expectation and every week or fortnight or every month, it's going to drop, you know, at this time and this date, or this day. Yeah. And if you're going to change frequency, it's fine. You just let your audience know. Yeah.
Okay.
Alrighty. Has this been helpful for you?
Yes, yes, definitely. I just need to get started now. But don't be surprised if I keep on bugging you about other little things with the newsletter.
All good. I will give you, I'm actually putting together a summary, like a comparison. I've got it here, but I'll flick this over to you. But I've got a sort of comparison. Can you see it on my screen?
Mm-hmm.
Between Substack, Beehive, and ConvertKit. These are like the main tools that you can use for ESP and the ones I would actually recommend. I wouldn't recommend something like a HubSpot, which is going to cost you. It starts off free, but then you end up paying like, you know, $2,000 a month for it. So it's not necessary. And for what you're trying to create, these are more than sufficient. It's just more around some more, like the main thing between using a ConvertKit, for example, as opposed to Substack or Beehive, is going to be, are you planning to create what we call lead magnets, which are like free resources that people can download, right? So if you were to say, I'm going to put together an event planning guide and make that something that people can download by giving me their email address, then ConvertKit is kind of better for that, especially because ConvertKit gives you the ability to do email automation, which means you can set up what's called a email nurture sequence or a welcome sequence, which automatically, when someone gives you their email address, you can send them, you know, a series of emails, you know, one per week for the next 10 weeks, for example, right? And you basically pre-write all of those, you put them in there, you plug them in, you hit go, and that's set up automatically for you. You can't really do that with Beehive and Substack. Beehive and Substack are really designed for just newsletter growth and creating a newsletter and focusing on the art of writing, which is something I know you're focused on. Like one of your goals here is to get better at writing and writing frequently. So if you don't care about, like, you know, automation and building, like, you know, email sequences and that kind of stuff, then don't need ConvertKit. Having said that, it is free for the first 1,000 subscribers, so you can still, you know, use it without the automation functions for that purpose, right? But I just find, as a newsletter tool, the Beehive and Substack are a lot easier to use and much more intuitive for newsletters, right?
Okay.
Now, the reason why I switched from Beehive to Substack, right, because Beehive is actually ended up being more expensive. It just was costing me like $40 a month. That for Beehive. It says free to start, but really the things you want to use, like especially if you want to start charging, you know, like a membership type thing, Substack ended up being the better option.
Okay.
So if you just want basic, let's get in there, let's get started and not worry about all the bells and whistles, then I'd recommend Substack for that reason. And the community I found on Substack is a lot better as well, because everyone's there wanting to become better writers. And so a lot of people are just engaging and commenting on each other's stuff and reading notes and sending messages and collaborating. And I found Substack is better for that.
Okay.
You know, some people might argue Beehive is better, but honestly, pick one and run with it. Like, I wouldn't get too worried about. Which one?
Just start, okay. Right?
Just start. Right. So let's recap what we've done today. We've gone through, like, why are you wanting to do this? We've gone through your motivations, your segments, your audience. We looked at your content ideas and sort of pillars or themes. And then from there, that sets the strategy. And from there, we go, okay, well, where are you going to put the newsletter? We've talked about LinkedIn versus email newsletter tool, right? So there's pros and cons for both, right? I see advantage for you to do both, because it's like, you know, you can build a deeper audience inside of a newsletter tool, but then you can also grow your audience on LinkedIn, because you're already doing that because of the work that you do and the field that you're in, right? So I think that's, you know, your goal would be, how do I move people off LinkedIn into my newsletter, right? Very easy. You just got to have a call to action every week in your LinkedIn newsletter saying, hey, by the way, if you want more, you know, cool stuff, go over here, right?
Yeah.
We talked about process and how kind of you can think about, like, how those two worlds work together and how much time you might want to allocate to doing this. Now, when you start out, you're going to take, you know, naturally, you'll probably take longer to do this. Like when I started out, it was taking me 4 hours like per newsletter. And then I worked out how to do, once I had my format and structure and I got it, got some, you know, consistency, then I was able to bring that real, like bring that down to 2 hours and then bring the VA in. So yeah. You know, and that happened over the course of a year. Okay. So that's our newsletter craziness coaching Yay. Session.
Thank all right. you.
All good. What's your number one takeaway from this session, Nock?
Just get started, really. but yeah, I mean, it's great to sort of brainstorm with someone else or to reach out to someone that has done it before. Definitely, you should always do that. Hence why I reached out to you, Ev, but thank you. Yeah, that's actually helped me. Yeah, it's cleared up my mind a little bit more now, like clarified what I am going to do and how I'm going to structure it all. So it all makes good. Sense.
Yep. Now, it wouldn't be a proper coaching session if I didn't end with a action for you, because you're going to submit something to me within the next 7 days. It's going to be your newsletter action plan. You're going to tell me, right, where you're going to, what, like, taking this conversation and you're going to go, here's where I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it on LinkedIn or Substack or whatever. What the format of the newsletter is going to look like, right? Mm-hmm. And then even if you just did that, and maybe if you're really gung-ho, first draft, like write the draft and then and send that to me. And I'm going to chase you up in the next few, like within 7 days and go, knock, where are you at? Okay, yeah, so that's
accountability.
Yes, my promise to you. All right, so let's leave it there for everyone else. Thank you for joining. If you have any questions, drop them in the chat and I will respond. And if you're listening to the podcast, please subscribe. I'm on iTunes or Apple Podcasts and Spotify and all those things now. Authentic Influence. And thanks again, Nock, for just being awesome.
Thank you for helping. Thank you so much.
No worries. Okay.